Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, L.A. Mayor Karen Bass marked 100 days in office. And what a 100 days it's been. The big emphasis for almost all of that 100 days has been homelessness. But this week, a bit of a detour. The LAUSD had a giant strike. 30,000 service employee union workers walked off the job for 3 days. The teachers walked off the job for 3 days. And nearly 400,000 students didn't go to school. Behind the scenes, negotiating a deal this entire time was Mayor Bass. We talked to her at City Hall in the middle of the negotiations as she's running back and forth between the two sides. She made sure to make time for us. And at that point, you know, she talked about the fact that she was still going back and forth between the two sides. We're not going to play that part here because we now know that the deal has been reached and the service employee workers are very happy. They got what they wanted. So for the purposes of this conversation, you're going to hear everything else we talked about. Homelessness, Metro, LAPD, Kevin De Leon, the Senate race, her family, being a woman in this job for the first time ever. It's an extensive conversation, and it's a good conversation with one of our most frequent guests, who has now been mayor for over 100 days. So here is LA Mayor Karen Bass.
The biggest issue for you since day one as mayor has been homelessness. I don't know if you're a Hamilton fan. I am. The musical, you know, yes. They have that song, The Room Where It Happens. Everybody yes. wants to be in the room where it happens. You're finally in the room where it happens.
That's right.
How is it different in the room where it happens yes. than maybe as an outsider looking in when it comes to homelessness?
I think it feels great to be in the room where it happens. You know, it's a tremendous responsibility, but nothing gives me pleasure more than to see somebody in a tent a week later in a motel and to actually go and visit them. And then to see them go from a motel into permanent supportive housing. But that's one of our biggest weaknesses, is moving from the motels to permanent supportive housing. And one of the things that's the most frustrating is that we actually have a lot of vacancies in permanent supportive housing, but there is still bureaucracy that we have to clear up in order to house more people permanently.
I mean, that's what you say is the biggest obstacle to all this, right?
Exactly,
is bureaucracy,
it is.
All the red tape. That's part of the reason that you declared the state of emergency on day one as mayor.
And it's allowed me to bypass some bureaucracy,
yeah.
but not all of it.
How did we get to this state where it's so bloated?
Well, and
is some of that the fault of the last mayor?
You know, honestly, what I believe, it's happened over time because it was never viewed as an emergency. This bureaucracy was not created by Mayor Garcetti. This bureaucracy has been around for a long time. Some of it is on the federal level, but one of the things that I've learned since sitting in this seat is that the federal government required us to come up with a system to prioritize who gets housed, but we came up with a system that is really problematic. So we are moving to change that. We have a motion that's passed through council. So we are clearing the bureaucracy out, but it's not happening as fast as I would like for it to.
Yeah, and so your big initiative has been Inside Safe.
That's
one of the big initiatives, probably the one that's gotten the most attention.
It is, that's right.
So far, you say about 1,000 people have been taken off the streets by that. 4,000 people overall have been taken off the streets from all the different things.
Right.
For people that maybe don't follow this that closely, what is Inside Safe and how is it different from what was happening before?
Sure. Well, frankly, Inside Safe is gathering the lessons from a variety of things that have happened before. So it's not as though we've come up with something brand new. It is literally doing outreach to people who are currently in tents, talking to them over a few days, finding out if they are interested in housing, and then we find them housing. And the housing that we have been placing people in are motels. We try very, very hard to find motels near their encampments, because I think what a lot of Angelenos don't understand is that encampments are actually small communities, and they have networks and relationships outside of the individuals that are in the tents. So we don't want to move people all across town. But Alex, we've had challenges with that.
Right.
We've been able to adhere to that in some cases, And in other cases, we haven't, because not every area has affordable motels near the encampments.
Well, and you've seen some of the criticism. Just recently, there was a big LA Times article about the fact that some people are moved from place to place. They finally feel like they have a home, and then they're moved from place to place. What do you say to those critics?
Well, they are right. Yeah. And that's a criticism I would have as well. That's not what we want to have happen at all. But you know what, though? Sometimes if we move people to a motel, we might have thought the conditions were better, but if that motel really has bad conditions, then we do move people. We don't want them in a place where there's roaches or rodents.
Another big criticism has been the cost of motels and hotels. What do you say to those critics?
I agree with those critics. Yeah. What I say is that it's not sustainable. So we are going to do it right now, but we have to look for less expensive interim housing. So you might have known that the governor has awarded Los Angeles with 500 tiny homes. It's actually a different model than the tiny homes that we have so far, and so we welcome that. Now, one of our other initiatives is to identify public land where we can place the tiny homes. So we're working on that right now. So I view motels as a temporary solution, because as far as I'm concerned, it is an emergency. I didn't want to come into office and say, hey, we're going to take the next 4 months to plan a perfect program. I wanted to hit the ground running and get people off the streets.
What do the next 100 days look like when it comes to homelessness?
Well, you know what? I think what we have learned over the first 100 days, the amount of bureaucracy we are working on, I see a lot of that being cleared. And so I imagine that we'll be able to house a lot more people. Now, you talk about the number 4,000. You know, I'm not saying all those 4,000s is a result of what I've done. Mm-hmm. The majority of those are work that the council and the former mayor was doing years before with Proposition HHH. I'm the beneficiary. I get to go to the ribbon cuttings.
Right.
And so in addition to more housing come online that's been in works for years, then I do think we're going to be able to clear out the bureaucracy and get people in the vacant housing. So we want to move them out of the motels as fast as possible into permanent supportive housing.
You say that so far we've done 4,000. You believe that we're still on track to hit that 17,000 people housed goal in 1 year, because you say exponentially the pace is going to pick up now that some of the bureaucracy has been cleared.
Yes, I have no doubt that the pace will pick up. And we're going to do everything we can to meet that goal of 17,000.
A new poll came out this week showing 50% approval for you, 14% disapproval, which is really very strong. But it also showed that 7 in 10 people don't see a tangible difference when it comes to homelessness. Why do you think there's so much skepticism there?
And maybe I don't take it as skepticism. I think those 7 in 10 people are correct. Unless you live near some of the encampments that we've cleared, you would view that. I think if you ask the people near the encampments that are no longer there, and one thing I have to say, the encampments that we've cleared have not repopulated.
Yeah.
So I think one of the most important things we accomplished through Inside Safe is dispelling the myth that people don't want to be housed. But again, Inside Safe was just one of our initiatives. The executive directives that we initiated to deal with the bureaucracy. But Alex, we also found that a number of projects that were in the works were stuck because of bureaucracy. We've been able to fast forward those projects. We also had a number of projects that had funding gaps. We were able to find the funds to close those gaps. That's going to lead to us being able to house a lot more people in the second or third 100 days.
You haven't taken a lot of TV cameras to Inside Safe locations.
Not at all. Never.
As a way to sort of respect the people out there. But we have seen a lot of pictures from your office of you talking to some of the unhoused individuals that are there. What are they telling you? What have you learned from them?
Oh, it's been sometimes very painful. I went to one tent and talked to a woman, a young mother. She had 3 kids that were not with her. And when she saw me, she just broke out crying. She was just happy that, you know, somebody was there. Other people have told me that, you know, they would love to get into housing. People have asked me about jobs. I've heard some people that wanted to go into the entertainment industry. I've heard all sorts of things. But, you know, the reason why we have not taken cameras is because this is not a stunt. It is not for publicity. And just out of respect, you can imagine, if you were in a tent, would you want somebody coming and looking at you?
Yeah.
And the pictures that have been taken, there have been a couple of times that there were photographers that were there, news photographers that showed up because they found out we were going to be there. Mm. We have not invited cameras, not trying to hide anything at all, but our goal is to get people off the streets so the cameras can come out. They can come before and see the tents and afterwards and see them gone.
Yeah. We are talking with the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. A big story recently has been Metro.
Yes.
There was a report that 22 people have died on Metro this year alone, many of them.
In one month. That was more than all of 2022.
And many of them drug overdoses. How does that happen?
Well, you know, we believe that's fentanyl, although I have asked for an exact report because we're not positive they're all drug overdoses. One of the things that has been initiated in Metro are ambassadors, and those are Angelenos who are trained and paid, their Metro employees, to be ambassadors on the trains. So one of the things that I proposed at the last Metro meeting is for all of those ambassadors to be trained in the use of Narcan. Narcan is the drug that can reverse an overdose. I've been to 3 Metro meetings so far, and I would say 90% of the meeting is talking about homelessness.
Obviously, when you go to Metro, through no fault of your own, you get security as the mayor of Los Angeles. Most people don't get that when they go.
Absolutely.
Would you send your friends or loved ones on Metro? Do you think that they would be safe on Metro right now?
I would send my friends on in Metro, but there are certain lines I would tell them to avoid at certain hours. But overall, I don't think it characterizes all of the lines.
So ambassadors are not police officers
no,
by
not
design.
Police officers, right.
And there's a question about what should go forward in terms of Metro Police. Metro
right.
Police is a combination of the LAPD, Long Beach Police, and also the LA County Sheriffs. But for
right.
the LAPD,
yes.
which is your portion of this, do you think there needs to be more officers there that might make people feel more safe?
Well, I think in some instances that's possible, but Alex, I actually have a problem with the design. 3 different agencies that police in 3 different ways.
Yeah.
So it's not uniform. So I think that's an issue as well. And so one of the things that a motion that passed in the last meeting is a study to see whether Metro should have its own independent police force.
And you agree with that?
I do. I'm very interested in the study. Now the study might come back and say it's not feasible, but I want to know that. Once upon a time, there was, I don't know if it was Metro or maybe it was RTD, predating Metro, where there was a specific focused police department. If we do have a new police department, I would like to see a combination where it's not just traditional law enforcement, but it's combined with social services. Because what is playing out on our trains are social, health, and economic problems that have fallen through the cracks, and we're doing what we always do, which is leave it to police to deal with social problems.
Well, let's talk more about the role of police. Because of that,
mm-hmm.
It's been hard to recruit police,
yes.
right? You've got a budget coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
What more can be done to recruit better officers? And what do you say to critics who say that the standards are being lowered right now?
Oh, no. You never lower standards. I don't believe that you lower standards.
But that's what some critics say is already happening in the LAPD.
I don't know how they would say that. There was criticism of me thinking that I was calling for lower standards, but I wasn't. You know what? We have a problem hiring in the city, period.
Mm-hmm.
Another layer of bureaucracy. If you apply for a job today, you might not know whether you get hired for 6 or 7 months. That applies to police as well. So one of the things that I called for was an examination of the process. It's not lowering standards, but why does it take so long to move people through the process? And that is a contributing factor, but it doesn't just apply to law enforcement. We have over 7,000 vacancies in the city.
Right. What do you say to people who feel like it's not a good time to be a cop right now?
Well, I mean, I think that you could say it's not a good time to be a mayor, too.
Would you say that?
I wouldn't. Oh,
okay.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have said that to me.
Yeah. We're talking with Mayor Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. A couple other quick hits. You've got a relationship with the city council that has been very strong so far. Everybody
mm-hmm.
seems to be behind you. But Kevin De Leon remains on the city council. Do you have a working relationship with him? Are you talking with him?
No, there's not much communication that goes on. But, you know, Kevin De Leon represents Skid Row. Kevin De Leon represents East L.A. His constituents deserve to be served, and I'm going to do everything I can. We are housing people in his district right now at the Grand Hotel, so there is communication between our offices.
Do you think he's basically beat this politically?
I don't know. I don't know that he has at all. I have not heard anybody rallying to his defense, nor have I heard anybody calling for him to continue.
Yeah.
He is up for re-election next year, so we'll see.
Another election question. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a big Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Lee, Robert Lee,
oh,
Katie Porter. Yeah. Well, there was some talk. Barbara Lee, Katie Porter, Adam Schiff, all Democrats, all
yes.
people you've served with in Congress.
And all friends.
All friends. You backed Barbara Lee. Why?
Yes. Well, first of all, I do have respect for all three. And I think one of the worst things about being an elected official is when you choose between your friends.
Right.
Barbara Lee has been a very close friend of mine, probably one of my very best friends in Congress, and I've known her for many, many years. I have the utmost respect for her, and so I do support Barbara. It's also very important to me that there are no African-American women in the Senate at all. And in our U.S. history, over 200 years, there's only been two.
Right, which would be Kamala Harris and also
Carol
Mosley Braun from Illinois. We are talking with the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. One of the great privileges of this show is that we got to meet your family.
Yes.
We got to meet your kids.
Yes.
We got to meet your daughter, who told us that she's the reason that you did this in terms of running for mayor. How are they adjusting to this? And how are you all as a family adjusting to being in this job?
You know, really, really well. They are. And, you know, for them, for this race, it was the first time they actually wanted to kind of be in the public space. And I think they've grown into their own. You know, my grandsons are still tagging along with me. Wanting to go everywhere with me, and so we've been adjusting very well.
One thing that looked especially fun was you went to the LAFC game.
Yes.
And they do this thing where somebody's an honorary Falconer, where they have, and you had the Falcon on your, and your grandson was there.
Yes.
Walk us through that experience, what that was like for you and for him.
Henry was right there with
yeah.
me, and, you know, I had never, of course, seen a Falcon up close. It was a
yeah.
little scary.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Falcon's eyes were covered. So
oh.
at least it couldn't see me, so I figured it couldn't figure out how to bite me. But
wow, the eyes are covered for
yeah,
that whole thing when it flies around the stadium?
No, what happens is that the Falcon has a little hood on its head,
okay.
and the trainer pops it off when I lift my hand up for the Falcon to leave. So it was really something. It was amazing to see the bird fly and to jet down, and it was exciting, and Henry had a good time.
And is he a big LAFC fan now?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Another way you made history in this race, of course, is you're the first woman mayor.
Yes.
This is Women's History Month.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious, have you faced discrimination being a female mayor? Have you
felt
that at all?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
How so?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's maybe it's slowing down a little bit, but the constant comparisons as to whether I was going to be Eric Garcetti number two, I don't think that would have been asked of a man.
Mm.
You know, there's no comparison. I've been in office for a long time. I have a series of accomplishments. Why would I all of a sudden become someone else?
And one thing that's been interesting is that the LA County Board of Supervisors is all women, and there's
yep.
that picture of you all literally locking arms, which has become your tagline.
We are very close.
How is that, working with women, and is it different working with women? We see you with Janice Hahn all the time.
Exactly.
Who's
exactly.
the chair of the board.
Exactly. Working with women is different. And, you know, I had over at the Getty House, I had all the women from the city council. So we do work very closely together. And we've been in sync with the Board of Supervisors, and that's been really nice. And by the way, I will tell you, the other thing that's really nice that I said during the campaign, I wanted to have every level of government in alignment. I never anticipated that it would happen that quickly. So when the Biden administration said they wanted to reduce homelessness by 25%, that brought the federal government in. Secretary Fudge, another close friend, delivered a $60 million check. Governor Newsom delivered a $196 million check and 500 tiny homes. We're in the process right now of negotiating a memorandum of understanding with the Biden administration to make Los Angeles one of the top cities that they engage with over homelessness. And then we've been working lockstep with the County Board of Supervisors, and I've been working very closely with every member of the City Council.
So you're saying it pays to have friends?
Yeah, relationships matter.
Yeah, which was the operating premise of your entire campaign. On this Women's History Month, what's your advice to young women that are interested in public service?
Oh, my advice is get involved. Get involved now. Get involved in your communities. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, I've worked with girls, not just women, but girls in elementary school, middle school. There's always ways that you can get involved. And then the nice thing about for this generation, for younger generations now, is that there's a number of organizations that will train you and prepare you if you want to run for office. That didn't exist when I was coming up.
And last question, you know, we literally talked on the first day of your campaign and talked throughout it. Mm-hmm. Now that you're actually here, is it all worth it? Like, how is it being mayor?
Yeah.
What's it feel like being in the job?
You know, it's been amazing. I get the instant gratification that's different than the legislative process, which is very intellectual and academic and takes a long time. But to be able to go down the street, to talk to somebody in a tent, to watch them get on a bus, to see them break down and cry because they don't have to sleep outside, to see women who wear 2 and 3 pairs of pants so that they don't get raped, to know that they can lock their door that night, there's nothing more rewarding than that.
We'll end there. Karen Bass, Mayor of Los Angeles, great to see you on The Issue Is. Thank you so much, and thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
Our thanks to Mayor Bass, and our thanks to you for listening. We really appreciate it. Please follow us and subscribe and share this out and tell your friends about it and send me messages. All that is always great. That's how we get the word out for our little show that could. And we'll see you next week for more of The Issue Is.